Welcome to Hawaii Public Radio's Congressional District 1 Candidate Forum. I'm Wayne Yoshioka, HPR's political reporter, and we're broadcasting live statewide from our Atherton Performing Arts Studio. I'm joined by HPR's Vice President and News Director, Bill Dorman, and our Olelo Television partners, Senior Advisor Jack Bates, Director John Wong, and Technician Scott Linguist. Our timers are HPR interns Savannah Harriman-Pote, a junior at Mount Holyoke College in Massachusetts, and Harrison Patino, a senior at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. In our studio audience, we have our invited HPR major donors and sustaining members who will be providing questions for our candidates. This forum features the six Democratic candidates who have previously held elected office and who are vying for their party's nomination in the general election for the District 1 congressional seat representing urban Honolulu and parts of southern Oahu. The candidates seated before me in alphabetical order are former Congressman Ed Case, Lieutenant Governor Doug Chin, State Representative Beth Fukumoto, State Representative Kaniela Ng, and State Senator Donna Mercado Kim called HPR earlier to say she cannot make it. And of course, we have Honolulu Council Chair Ernie Martin. We now begin our forum. We will be referring to our candidates by first and last names only. Candidates, you have 1 minute for opening statements. We begin with Ed Case.
Aloha and welcome to all Hawaii Public Radio listeners across the state. Mahalo for joining us tonight. I'm Congressman Ed Case, seeking to return to my service in Congress on behalf of our country and our Hawaii. A couple of brief facts about myself. I'm born and raised on the Big Island, 4 generations in Hawaii. I went away to college and then ended up on Capitol Hill with U.S. Representative and Senator Spark Matsunaga, where I spent 3 years. And that, so to speak, took me from there to where I am today. I'm a lawyer by training. I have practiced law in Honolulu for 30-plus years. I served in the state legislature for 8 years and 4 years in Congress. I'm running because I believe that our government is broken, and I believe that we've got to start to fix some of our problems as opposed to just yelling and screaming at each other. I think we need to have a more solution-based approach to our problems, and I think we need to attack all of the issues in our country from that perspective. I also believe that we need a very, very strong team in Washington, and I believe I can lend my experience to our delegation there to keep things going for Hawaii. Mahalo.
Thank you. Doug Chin.
Aloha and good evening, everyone. I'm Doug Chin. There's been this evening meditation that I've been saying to myself for the last year and a half, and it's basically these three things. It's don't become cynical about what I see around me. Don't become numb towards what's happening in the country. And then finally, always hope for a brighter future. When my parents came to the United States, they had nothing. All they had was just simply the same hope that they would be able to give their kids a brighter future. And for me, I'm in this race because after 20 years of being in public service, whether I've been a prosecutor or the managing director or acting mayor of the city and county or an attorney general or the lieutenant governor, I've always believed that there is something that is seriously wrong that's happening in Washington, D.C., and I want very much to defend Hawaii's values and to promote Hawaii's priorities. My wife is here, my bride of 22 years. She's my best friend. We have a daughter who's 20 and a son who's 17.
Thank you. Beth Fukumoto.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. And I wanted to thank HPR as well as all the sponsors and Olelo. Thanks for having us. I am currently elected in the State House. I've been in the House for 6 years now. I first got involved in politics after coming home from school. I was graduating with a bunch of student debt and needing to live with my parents, so I looked for a job. And the place that I found work was at the legislature. And while I was there, I saw a lot of politicians that have been in power for a long time not doing what I thought they needed to make life better for Hawaii's families. Right now, Hawaii is in the process of losing an entire generation because we have not done enough to fix things like affordable housing, to make our infrastructure better, to make our electricity cheaper. We haven't done enough, and there have been plenty of people that have had plenty of time to do that, and they haven't, which is why I'm running for Congress. We need somebody in Washington that's still close to those issues that are facing us, that still understands how important it is that we make things livable and affordable here in Hawaii.
Thank you. Kaniela Ng.
Aloha, my name is Kaniela Saito Ng. I was born and raised in Hawaii, come from at least seven generations. You know, I fight for working families because I come from one. My mom worked at Liberty House, he sold shoes. My dad was a waiter as an ILWU member at a hotel. And he passed away when I was 11 years old, unexpectedly. So I had to work in the pineapple fields to help with family bills. Alongside, shoulder to shoulder with undocumented immigrants, a lot of folks that I knew that they would never have the help that I got from my teachers and church. So, you know, that's what drives me, that there's a lot of folks out there struggling. 70% of us are living paycheck to paycheck. Most of my classmates from Kamehameha moved to the mainland. So I'm here with the love of my life, Kara, the state director on the Commission on the Status of Women. Also, my son, Laguna, who's now 2 years old. And, you know, we just want to work to make sure that he has a shot to make it here. And I think all of us share those values. And that's why I've been pressing the most progressive issues in this race, like student debt cancellation, housing for all, and more. Thank you.
Thank you. Ernie Market.
Aloha, mai kakou, and good evening, everyone. Thank you for inviting me here today. Ernie Martin, most of you know me as chairman and presiding officer of the Honolulu City Council. I know Wayne Yoshioka has interviewed me many a times. I mean, I'm fortunate. I've been serving in that position for longer than any of my predecessors on the Honolulu City Council. I feel very lucky to have had that opportunity, but, you know, my life has always been paved with gold. I was raised in public housing. I'm not ashamed of that. One of nine kids. My dad, a U.S. Army vet. My mom, an immigrant from Japan. But we're fortunate, I think, in our life. I mean, I'm fairly well educated. I don't have one degree. I have four different college degrees. Very well educated. An attorney by training. In fact, Doug Chin is my classmate from law school. But I'm fortunate. I have a good family of my own that's eating dinner right now and avid listeners of Hawaii Public Radio. So thank you.
Well, thank you. We now go to our first question. You each have 1 minute. They were developed by our interns and our HPR staff. The question, the latest Hawaii poll conducted July 6th to 11th included 244 likely voters with a margin of error plus or minus 6.4%. That sample size represents 0.043% of potential Congressional District 1 voters, hardly conclusive. How do you see your standing in the race? Doug Chin.
Well, I think one of the things that we all got to have to accept is that ultimately what happens on Election Day is going to decide who ends up going to Congress. And I completely accept that. And I think if anything, all I can say is that this has been an amazing 7 months. I mean, through this time, I've really been able to talk with and connect with so many great people who have talked about their concerns about what they see in Washington, D.C. I've been pleased by the response to just wanting to have someone there in Congress who's making a difference, who's standing up for Hawaii's values and Hawaii's priorities. And I want to do everything I can to be able to serve those people.
Thank you. Beth Fukumoto.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you mentioned, the sample size of the poll, I think the first thing, just on behalf of my generation, that I think I need to say is we need to figure out how to poll millennials better and poll young people. A lot of these polls are really disenfranchising. We have 65% of these polls are coming from landlines, and people my age and in this generation, we're not going to sit through 15 minutes of questions to answer a poll, and I think that's really problematic. I think what that's doing, it's making a lot of people not want to vote anymore and not feel like they're a part of the system and not feel like they have a voice. So I am a little concerned, as you mentioned, with the sample size. But I think the energy that we're feeling is great. I mean, I would agree with Doug here that getting to know the community, getting out there, the number of people that say to me, we need a new voice, we need new people. It's so nice to see a young person doing this. It makes me believe that there is a really good chance for somebody this year who is different and who is new.
Thank you. Kaniela Ng.
So those polls track the likely voters, and all you have to do to turn that poll on its head is to bring out new voters. And that's what we're doing in this race. We're not taking any corporate money or money from lobbyists. The only campaign who's rejected all that sort of old boy establishment money. So, you know, everything, everyone can say that we need new blood, but really, if it's just fresh paint on an old machine with the same corporate donors pulling the strings, what's the point? So that's why we've generated so much momentum. Over 300 volunteers signed up, over 7,000 individual donations. That crushes this district record by 3x. So we have people knocking on doors every day, and that's how we're going to bring people out. In places that they tell us not to, like college campuses, like public housing, we're fiercely fighting for working people no matter who's on the other side. And I have people that are 19 years old saying, you know, we're going to vote for our first time. So we're fired up, and we're going to take it to the home stretch.
Thank you. Ernie Martin.
Thank you. You know, I've never been a believer in polls. I mean, if I believed in polls, I wouldn't be where I am in life. I mean, when I ran for city council, I mean, I was an underdog. I got in the race very late. I ran against the poster boy from PRP, John White. I mean, well-financed campaign, ran very early, had probably 95% of the union endorsements, you know, and was a clear-cut favorite to win. But I'm the one sitting here before you, serving on the San Luis City Council. You know, I always look at these opportunities to, not for myself, but an opportunity to serve the public. I mean, odds have always been against me, you know, but it hasn't detracted from me accomplishing what I have in life. And I think going forward, like all of us, irrespective of where we stand in the polls, we're going to run hard to the finish line. That's the way us local people are raised. You know, you fight to the very end, and I'll fight to the very end. I mean, if you sell my commercials, you know.
Thank you. Ed Case.
Well, Beth, I certainly feel very different, and my blood is feeling nice and new and fresh, so I thank you for that comment. Look, I agree with everybody up here about polls. Polls are snapshots in time. They're subject to error. Any candidate that depends on where he or she is in the polls, when the polls tell him that or her that, that's not a candidate that's really paying attention. They can change. They can work in different ways, so... we don't do anything other than read them, and it doesn't alter the basic fact, the basic motivation to go out there and communicate your message to as many voters as many times as possible and let them make that call. Doug is right. It's their call. From my perspective, when we got into this race on June 5th, we got out there and started talking with voters immediately, canvassing right across the district. If I could only canvass in campaigns, I would be a happy camper, door to door. And I think that people have valued my experience, valued my problem-solving approach, and valued the contributions I can make to Hawaii as a member of that team.
Thank you. And our first audience question, regardless of which party controls the House in November, how will you work across party lines to help create a more functional working government, such that the minority party is not simply the party of no opposing all legislation? We start with Beth Fukumoto.
I think it's incredibly important. You know, people say bipartisanship is a bad word, and I think it can be when you're not paying enough attention to what the people in your district and the people in your state really want, the values that they sent you there to fight for. And I think you do sometimes need to just, so you know. So it's a mistake to say we need to always compromise, we need to always work across the aisle, because there are some differences that we just can't do that with. But there are always things, especially when it comes to things like money for the district, things like infrastructure projects, things like affordable housing. You know, I'm looking at different grant programs. That's been one of the focuses of my campaign, looking at federal funding for all these different areas. And those are not partisan issues. Those are just things that we need for Hawaii, and we need to work with whoever we can to bring that money home. We've reduced our federal funding by 50% because we don't have the same people still in Congress. And so we need new people up there to fight for that money, and you're going to have to work across the aisle to do that.
Thank you. Kaniela Ng.
So bipartisanship in Congress, like, let's not kid ourselves. I don't think any of us on this panel can sit across from Donald Trump and hash out something that will actually work for working people in Hawaii. Maybe we could tack in some few things in infrastructure spending, but it won't be through compromise. It'll be through fighting vigorously and fiercely for working people. And that's what we need. I mean, look at Affordable Care Act. Obamacare, great. A lot of people rely on it. But we made 40 Republican amendments. For what? Zero Republican votes. And then after that compromise, they come in there and say, that's your position. Here's our position. Even though we already compromised it, let's stop getting had by Republicans and start leading with an affirmative vision. So when we're saying like restore net neutrality, we should go bolder than that. We should say public broadband, high speed across the nation. We shouldn't just say protect ACA. We should say Medicare for all now. And not just affordable housing, but housing for all. If we can afford $30 million condos in Kaka'ako, we can afford to house all of us here in Hawaii. Scarcity is a political choice. We need the will to take it.
Thank you. Ernie Martin.
Thank you. You know, I serve in a nonpartisan office. I think that should speak, to some degree that I can work on both sides of the table. I've been fortunate, I think, of all the candidates here. I have served both on the executive and legislative branch of government. I think I'm the only one who've had that opportunity. So I know how to work both within the legislative branch as well as the executive branch. You know, when we were lobbying for our rail funding, in D.C. when Senators Akaka and Inouye was alive and we made the rounds among the congressional delegation, we didn't just meet with Democrats, we met with Republicans as well. I mean, that's the way business is done in D.C. You know, if you're overly concerned about Donald Trump is just an individual person who just speaks his mind, doesn't necessarily represent the interests of the federal agencies that are involved. Classic example, I mean, with the recent flooding relief that was granted by FEMA. You know, there was some fear that Donald Trump would not release those funds. But at the end of the day, the federal government, they're going to do their job. It's a matter of asking the right questions and knowing where the resources are.
Thank you. Ed Case?
You know, I've been so fortunate to work with some great folks throughout my career in Congress. When I went in with Spark Matsunaga, it was Inouye and Fong in the Senate and Matsunaga and Mink on the House side. And when I went in as my own right, it was Inouye and Akaka in the Senate and Abercrombie and myself on the House side. And you know, those folks, they served over multiple administrations, Republican and Democrat. They served over multiple majorities, Democrat and Republican. And they taught me one thing. And that thing was that there's a time to fight. So Kaneala's right about that. There's a time to try to work together to get things done. And there's a time to try to help each other so that when you help somebody else, Republican or Democrat, they'll find a time to help you. So the best example I can give you is George Bush. I was in Congress under George Bush as president and Republican majority in both the House and the Senate. And there was no way that George Bush was ever going to create the largest National Marine Monument in this world. He was not an environmentalist. And yet we did work with him and convinced him to get that done. So it can be done.
Thank you. Doug Chin?
My answer is similar. I don't think most people would question that when it comes to times when our values that are very important to us, such as tolerance or diversity, are threatened, that I'm not going to hesitate to take action and fight and stand up for what's right. But at the same time, I feel very comfortable with the ability to reach across the party lines. One of the things that happened when I was the Attorney General from 2015 to 2018 is that I was actually elected by my colleagues to serve as the Western Region Chair, meaning that I was in charge of a bipartisan group of Republican Attorneys General as well as Democratic Attorneys General from all the Western states, so the West Coast states, Mountain states, as well as the Pacific Islands. And through that, we were able to find a lot of ways that we could be able to find bipartisan support, whether it was opioids, tackling opioids, tackling consumer protection issues, even so much so as trying to figure out ways to be able to bring banking for marijuana and cannabis use. And so I think there are ways to be able to have that bipartisan support.
Thank you. Our next question, what would you do to address for Hawaii climate change, in particular, the expected increase of extreme events of wind, like in hurricanes, sea level, and drought? We begin with Kaneala Ng.
Our campaign from day one has been the most aggressive on climate because the stakes are so high. Within my son's generation, by the year 2100, within his lifetime now, Waikiki could be underwater. We could see a 3-foot sea level rise unless we take bold action in the next 15 years. And frankly, a lot of the things, not just proposed, I mean, Republicans are denying that climate change exists, but Democrats are taking these half measures that aren't working, that are rooted in, that are like compromises with the corporate polluters and electric companies that are causing these problems because they're taking their money. We're leading with the Green New Deal. That's 100% renewable energy nationwide by 2035 through a federal jobs guarantee. So to transition people away from fuel and coal, to retrofit buildings, to plant trees, and to build a clean energy, advanced energy economy. And we got six other candidates across the nation, including Randy Bryce, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who just won in New York, to follow our lead or to campaign with us. And we're really pushing the boundaries of what it means to protect Island Earth.
Thank you. Ernie Martin.
Thank you. I think, first of all, from a national perspective, it was a mistake for us to withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord. I think we need to work towards getting back in and acknowledging that that is a serious issue for our nation to face. You know, I think Honolulu and the state of Hawaii is fortunate that we're very progressive on this particular issue, both the good work that the state legislature has done. I think Kaneala needs to do a better job of bragging about that. You know, I know he's worked very hard on this particular issue. But for the county, I think we're very progressive. I mean, we had a charter amendment that established a climate change commission. I think we just recently published a report with respect to their findings. The mayor has issued a directive with respect to abiding by and recognizing some of the concerns that were identified in that report, to dedicate the necessary resources to address this particular issue. I know that the commissioners will be also coming before our body, the Honolulu City Council, and we will also be taking a look, I think, from a local perspective to address this issue.
Thank you. Ed Case.
Well, I was very humbled and honored to gain the support of the Sierra Club, both national and Hawaii chapter, earlier this week. And it was a long and vigorous process that they went through. But what they did was to take a look at my actual record in Congress, which was rated very highly on environmental issues, whether it be air environment, land, or marine, all three of those, including some of the very early discussion on climate change. And so, you know, this is just unfinished business for me, but far, far worse than when I was in Congress previously. And I agree with Ernie. The first and foremost mistake was to withdraw from international conventions where we would be able to work with other countries of the world to reduce carbon emissions and to try to address climate change. And obviously, we have to go back into Congress. And this is one that you fight on. You try to fight for the environment in Congress. This has to be done. This is not a friendly administration from that perspective. And then, obviously, assist with federal funding to help Hawaii to prepare for the effects of climate change.
Thank you. Duck Chin.
So just to be clear, when President Trump withdrew from the Paris Climate Agreement, then one of the things that immediately happened was within a few days, I actually ended up signing the Paris Climate Agreement as the Hawaii Attorney General, along with our governor, Hawaii Governor David Ige. And I totally believe, along with many of the people at this table, that we need to take an aggressive approach to address climate change. And it really comes down to, you know, what are the things that we can be able to do in the federal government to be able to stop that? So on one hand, we can certainly be a voice, and we can certainly make sure that people who are denying climate change are being immediately countered back with our rhetoric, our true rhetoric, and our scientific basis for why we believe that's the case. But I think beyond that, there's so much that the federal government can do. And most recently, I think we've seen that in terms of funding that's been brought in, $345 million, that's going to be able to help the Alawai Canal address issues of climate change. For that to happen, we need to work with county and state.
Thank you. Beth Fukumoto.
So I think I'd first say, I think it's really important for us to set really strong goals. I've recently been talking about the same thing that Kaneala is talking about, although I think that we can do it by 2050. I've looked at Kaneala's plan, but I'm not convinced. I think it's important when we set these goals to make sure that we have a very, very good record of how to get there and really clear points of how we're going to accomplish them. And I'm not sure that 2035 is there. I hope he's right. I hope we would be able to work together on that. But some of the things that I think we can do right now, because I think it's really important that we have actual tangible things that we're going to do immediately. One is that we need to get more money for grid modernization. The federal government does grants for that. There is a fund for that. We just haven't gotten it. The second thing is to make sure that all of our EISs, and we did this in the legislature this year, make sure that all of our EISs are including climate change. And then the last thing is making sure that all of that new housing that we're building, any new grant that comes in from the federal government, considers climate change when they're actually offering that grant. Right now, all the building in Kaka'ako is actually potentially going to be flooded in the next 10 to 20 years.
Thank you. Our next question. Next question. There are we'll have rebuttals later in the program. There are an estimated 12 million undocumented immigrants in the U.S. and many thousands in Hawaii. If you could craft policy to address this, what would it look like? We start with Ernie Martin.
Thank you. No, that's a question I think most of us have been asked on many of these forums. You know, I think, DACA itself, I think that should be reinstated. I think it's a policy that had worked previous to President Trump revoking or reversing his position on that particular issue. You know, it's unfortunate, I think, what we're seeing nationwide in terms of this particular issue. I mean, the sole issue of President Trump separating children from families is very embarrassing. I mean, not just embarrassing for our country, but embarrassing for me personally, being a father of three children. I can't see any circumstance where anyone would separate children from their parents. I mean, I feel very embarrassed that one of the most powerful countries in the world, that we would have taken that position, given that these are just innocent victims that he's using as political pawns to further his own agenda. So that those type of actions we need to be very assertive against.
Thank you. Ed Case?
You know, Ernie could not have expressed my own feelings on the separation of children from their families any better. And so that was well said, Ernie. I completely agree with you. When I talk about dysfunction in Washington, one of the clearest examples of dysfunction is the failure to come up with comprehensive immigration reform. This has been a failure of 15, 20 years now. And what concerns me so much is that these failures are avoidable. The consequences are avoidable. We knew 10, 15 years ago that we had issues across the board with immigration, that the principle of immigration was sound, but the practice was broken. So comprehensive immigration reform to me means, first of all, increasing legal immigration, number one. Number two, we do have to enforce our borders. It's naive to have any kind of an immigration policy that continues the status quo as to our borders any further. And number three, there has to be a path to citizenship for illegal immigrants as well.
Thank you. Doug Chin?
This has been an issue that's been very close to my heart, something I've really cared about very much over the last year and a half. What I would suggest is this, is absolutely, I think everybody at this table is going to support immigration reform. I respectfully suggest that if I had the opportunity to go to Congress, I could be a national voice on this issue, that I could be someone who'd be able to not only be able to keep the conversation going about being able to find solutions for undocumented immigrants, but I'd be able to bring together people to really be able to find some great solutions. So some of those solutions would be doing whatever we can to be able to fix DACA, take it out of the partisan fighting that's going back and forth between the parties. But I think even more than that, I think there are ways that we can be able to improve the Immigration and Nationality Act. But I would say the one thing that we would have to protect is making sure that we protect family reunification. That is a tenet for Hawaii immigrants, as well as immigrants all across the country, and we need to fight for that.
Thank you. Beth Fukumoto.
When I first saw the stories about children getting separated from their parents, I was reminded of my father. He was 2 when his father was taken from him because he was a Japanese American. And the government was taking and rounding up Japanese Americans. And my grandfather was very fortunate. He was only gone overnight. But my father, to this day, it's been 75 years, he still remembers that moment when his dad got taken away from him. And that's something that these kids are going to remember forever. They're never going to forget that that's something that the United States let happen to them. So I think it's incredibly important that whoever we send fight and make sure that family reunification happens, what my campaign did at that time, because it was a very moving thing for me. I said that we needed to stop campaigning. And I asked for that day, I asked everybody that was going to do anything for me to call Congress and tell them to stop this right now, to put something in place and to pass the Democratic bill that had been introduced to make sure that these families get unified again. And then everything else that people said, improving DACA, making sure that we actually get comprehensive reform.
Kaniela Ng.
Okay, yeah, everyone here is going to talk about preserving DACA, improving DACA, but I'm very, very disappointed to hear some of the Republican talking points coming from Mr. Case earlier about securing our border. It sounds like we're stuck in 1998, frankly. And that's one thing our party can do a much better job on. I loved President Obama. I'm a big fan also of Bernie Sanders and his policies. But both of those politicians just 5-6 years ago supported building a wall, supported travel bans on certain countries. And we need to hold ourselves accountable and look in the mirror and say, you know, it's time for us to really take bold stances on these issues. So yes, protect DACA, also pass a Clean Dream Act and abolish the American Gestapo known as ICE that's committing human rights abuses all across the nation. I mean, immigration now is not a problem. It's an asset to our society economically and morally and in terms of diversity. My first job was picking pineapples at 14 years old when my dad passed away, shoulder to shoulder with undocumented immigrants. You know, as a native Hawaiian, I know what it's like to be displaced from a homeland. That's why we got to stop reckless wars that are causing this in the first place. That's another policy.
Thank you.